So, this is Beitza, the Talmud Beitza. Beitza literally is an egg. Okay, so the Mishnah starts here with regard to an egg that was laid on a festival. So there's a dispute between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. If you have an egg that's laid on the festival, can it be eaten or not on that day? Okay, so we have to understand why that would be an issue. So Beit Shammai says it may be eaten, and Beit Hillel says it may not be eaten. Okay? The Gemara will explain at length. So this already is more of a side note. This anything that's in bold is the actual words of the Mishnah, and then this is more commentary. As the Gemara will explain at length, apropos this exceptional case in which Beit Shammai are lenient and Beit Hillel are strict. So then it goes on to two other halachot, which the truth is that I'm going to jump over here. We're going to just jump into the analysis of this one, this line right here. If an egg is laid on the festival, can it be eaten on that day or not? Beit Shammai says you can't. Beit Hillel says you can. I'm sorry, the other way. Beit Shammai says you can eat it. Beit Hillel says you cannot. Okay, so the question is why? So the Gemara says, first of all, we need to qualify what is the status of the chicken that is laying this egg. The Gemara inquires, with what case are we dealing in the Mishnah? If we say that the Mishnah is referring to a chicken that is designated for eating, i.e., one planned to slaughter and eat a chicken that laid an egg, so if that's the case, so we have this concept called muktzah. Have you ever heard muktzah? Have you heard that term? Muktzah. Okay, so muktzah means like most people, like Shabbos and Yom Tov have this concept of muktzah. Muktzah means that I shouldn't, that this is off limits to me today. Why? So that's the question as to why. How do we understand why something is kind of off limits? So there are different reasons. One for it could be that this item, for example, you have a hammer. So a hammer is used for work that you technically shouldn't be doing on Shabbos, right? Or Yom Tov. You don't, it says refrain from creative work. A hammer is usually used for creative activity, building, right? Not allowed to build on Shabbos. So therefore, the tool of building should also be off limits, unless there's some other utility for that item. So for example, a hammer. You can use, if I have walnuts and I need to crack the walnuts, I have a hammer, I can use that to break my walnuts. So like maybe you can come up, and say, okay, this item, maybe I can make an argument to say that this is something that can be used and has utility for Shabbos or Yom Tov. Yom Tov for sure, when I'm like allowed to do things that are around the idea of preparing food. So maybe the hammer can be used. But in general, like if you take an item that is only used for things that are not allowed to be done on a Shabbos or Yom Tov, so then we say that's muktzah machmas iser. It's muktzah, it's set aside because this its utility is not meant for usage today. Another example, more generic, but it's interesting, is what happens at sundown. As the sun is setting on Friday afternoon or the eve of a holiday, will determine as the sun is setting, meaning as Shabbos comes in on Friday, how I look at this item will determine whether or not I can use it the rest of this 24-hour period. Because I'm going to say, I have my mind on this thing or I don't have my mind on this thing. So Muktzah says that if something is not in my mind at the time of sunset, or we call it Bein HaShemashah, between sunset and nightfall, so that will determine, that will actually dictate the status of this item. So that if I did, I if I had, if I didn't have in mind that I'm going to use this thing as the sun is setting on Friday afternoon, so now it's really off limits the rest of those 24 hours. Now, what's interesting is there's a machloket, there's a dispute as to whether or not muktzah, like I just described, actually applies or not. Rabbi Shimon says there's no such thing as muktzah. I don't buy that. Like there's no, just what? I don't hold a muktzah. And then Beis Hillel, I'm sorry, Rabbi Yehuda, who's a disputant with Rabbi Shimon in that case, will say, no, there's such a thing as moksa. If you didn't have in mind when that sun is setting on Friday for that item to be used over the next 24 hours, you can't use it. Okay, moksa. Now here's another concept called nolad. Nolad would be our case of the egg being laid. Okay, nolad means to be birthed, to be born. What happens if something didn't exist at the time of sunset on Friday, and it only comes into being mid Shabbos, right? Shabbos morning or Yom Tov morning, the chicken lays the egg, right? So wait a second, it didn't even exist on the onset of Shabbos. So if you hold that you had to have in mind the thing at the time of sunset, so it didn't even exist. How could it even? It's so for sure, if you hold muksa like Rabbi Yehuda, then nolad's also a problem. Within Rabbi Shimon, who doesn't hold the muksa, maybe you might say he might also say nolad's a problem. But in the end, we'll see the Gemara. It ends up saying the two are the same. If you muksa and nolad seem to go together. Okay, now one of the things I've analyzed, like gone through the topic, is that Rabbi Shimon doesn't say exclusively, I don't hold a muksa all the time. Like, for example, he basically, the way I understand his develop, the way he would look at it, at Friday at sunset, which is like a determining, it kind of like sets the tone for the entire 24 hours of Shabbos, or for Yom Tov, the sunset of the eve of the holiday. So Rabbi Shimon saying, I don't hold a muksa, means that I don't need to have in mind in order to let something be designated to be permissible during the next 24 hours. But Rabbi Shimon actually holds in the case, very specifically, he says, let's say you take grapes and you want to dry them out to make them into raisins. So if I take that up to my roof and I lay them out on the roof or on my whatever, like somewhere that's clearly going to be set aside for the next couple of days to dry out. So I've done an action that's actively saying, I don't want anybody touching this for the next 24 hours for sure, if not a little longer. So in that case, Rabbi Shimon says that now is off limits because I've done an act. I've actively done something. But really, other than doing something actively, setting something aside, if I don't do something active, then default setting says, it's open. It's that I don't believe that there's such a thing as having to have in mind. Rabbi Yehuda will say, I hold a muksa, which means, unless I have in mind on the eve of Shabbos or Yom Tov, that I'm going to want to use this thing in the next 24 hours, if I didn't do that, then it's a problem. So you see like this idea. So now, did you have to have in mind? Did you not have to have in mind? So that's like kind of like, but if you did something actively to say, I am setting this aside, it is not to be used. So then, even Rabbi Shimon, who doesn't usually hold up muksa, that seems to be saying, I am dedicating this and saying it should be off limits for the next 24 hours, okay? So that's kind of an interesting breakdown. Now, in this case, we're talking about the egg being laid. So that's coming in. It's like, depending on what you would think about that determining factor of the sunset period of the Ben HaShemashos that will determine the next 24 hours. Onset equals, like, however, status of, onset of Ben HaShemashos will determine the next 24 hours of the status of this item. Okay. And then, of course, if you jump in like Nolad, where it's born and it didn't exist prior, that already also throws a little bit of a curveball as to like how you would look at it. Okay, but according to Rabbi Shimon, who seems to say like unless you did something actively to say this is off limits, everything else is okay, green light. So even if it's born, it didn't even exist per se, then it should be okay. Now there's another wrinkle here, which you might say, hey, does something have to be existent in the world at that moment of time for it to be in play? Or maybe not. Is that a prereq? So, like, for example, like this case of the egg being born, but the egg being laid, but The egg the truth is, the egg existed in the womb of the chicken, or in whatever inside the chicken at the time of sundown. It was there already. You could say it existed in the world. Maybe you don't like how you would look at that. But if someone comes into, like, here's a classic example. You ready? A newspaper. This is always the question. The New York Post. And the reason I use the New York Post is because it's a late edition type of thing that always had the sports scores, you know. So that is being created after Shabbos started, right? Because it's being printed Friday night when Shabbos already started. So it didn't exist prior to sundown. So can you read the newspaper on Shabbos? Because it didn't exist at sundown when you needed to determine whether something would be off limits or not. Or can I argue and say, listen, the reality is the paper itself for sure existed prior. Are you telling me now that as I print the paper that I'm creating something new that didn't exist prior? Or no? It existed prior because the paper was there. It's just you're putting ink on paper. Or do we say that by putting ink on paper, you're creating something new, which is called a newspaper, which didn't exist prior because it's that's what creates it, right? You see where it can get fun, right? Then there's a whole other question of the delivery of the paper. That's a whole other thing. Meaning, even if you say that it's not an issue of nolad and muktza, but then if it's being brought out from outside the area of your dwelling, like when the sun sets where you are on Friday afternoon, determines your area and then the surrounding area of where you live and the communities, as long as they're connected, would create that greater area. But outside of that, 2,000 amot outside of the closed area of that area, you can't bring things from those outside areas on Shabbos. So that's something that's another tchum issue. That's called tchum. But just on the issue of nolad, right? So you could see where things could potentially be created and how we understand the status of something like that. And, you know, okay, so here, back to our egg. So now, in the case of the egg, what are we talking about? Meaning, first let's go back and say, what is the status of the chicken? Because chickens have two things. They could be eaten, they could be food. So they could be categorized as food. Or they could be categorized as an egg maker, right? Two separate things. So the Gemara asked the question, with what case are we dealing with in the Mishnah? If we say that the Mishnah is referring to a chicken that is designated for eating, i.e. when planned to slaughter and eat a chicken that laid an egg, what's the reason that Beit Hillel prohibit eating the egg? Because if you're saying that the chicken is food, so it's food that has been separated, right? Meaning that the egg is just part of the chicken. It's all one big thing of food. So the chicken's food, the egg is food, it's all one big piece of food. And the entire chicken is considered food as it is designated for eating. And this egg is simply a part that became detached. Just as one may partake of the chicken itself on a festival, its egg would likewise be fit for consumption. So now we're talking on Yom Tov. So Yom Tov, on a holiday, we're allowed to eat food. We're allowed to prepare food. So if this is categorized as food, why would the egg be a problem? It's just an extension of the chicken, which was okay to eat. It's consumable. So to the egg. So why would Beis Hillel say it's a problem? So it can't be that. Rather, the Mishnah must be referring to a case of a chicken designated for laying eggs. Since the owner of this chicken decided not to eat it on the festival, it is classified as set aside muktza, and muktza items may not even be moved, let alone eaten. Since the chicken itself is muktza, its egg is muktza as well. So if we're saying this thing is set aside, it's off limits, so then, okay, you can't, the egg should also be a problem. So then the question then becomes, so Beit Shammai said you can eat it, the Gemara asks, if so, what is the reason that Beit Shammai for permitting one to eat the egg? After all, there's muktza, meaning it's been set aside. So the Gemara expresses surprise at this question. And what is the difficulty? Perhaps Beit Shammai do not hold that there is a prohibition of muktza, right? We said there's this other position, Rabbi Shimon, who holds there's no such thing as muktza. Maybe Beit Shammai just holds like that. There are different opinions with regard to the scope of the prohibition of muksa. It is possible that Beit Shammai, like other Tanaim, other people of the Mishnah time, maintain that there is no prohibition of this type of muksa. Perhaps this is subject to their dispute with Beit Hillel. Right. So maybe that's what's going on here. So now, before stating its proposed solutions for this difficulty, the Gemara notes, it enters our mind to say that even one who permits moving an item that was set aside by its owners on a festival or Shabbat prohibits the owners from doing so with an object that came into being, nolad, on a festival. Right? Because we talked about the idea, did it exist at the time of sunset? So we talked about this idea of nolad, which means something that comes into the world, that's born post that demarcation line. So even if you say that muksa is not an issue, but nolad might be an issue. So one may not move an object that came into being on a festival of Shabbat, since the owner never entertained the notion that he would be able to use it. This egg is certainly an object that came into being on the festival. What then is the reason of Beit Shammai, who said that it's okay to eat? So here's the first answer. What the Gemara is going to have here is four different positions to explain this Mishnah. Okay? Four different positions to explain why Beit Shammai says it's okay to eat the egg that's laid on Yom Tov, and why Beit Hillel says it's not. Okay? Four positions. So here's the first crack of Nachman. So Rav Nachman says, actually, the Mishnah is referring to a chicken designated for laying eggs. Okay, so it's something that's not food. However, our previous assumption was mistaken, as the sage who holds that there is a prohibition of muksa in general also holds that there is a prohibition of objects that came into being. While the one who does not hold that there is a prohibition of muksa likewise does not hold that there is a prohibition of objects that came into being. So basically like this. If you hold of muksa, you hold that nolad, that if it's born, came into being after, like in the middle of the day, they go hand in hand. So yes muksa, yes nolad, meaning that if you believe that there's this idea that something is set aside, it is off limits, so too if something came into being midday, it's also off limits. They go hand in hand. But the guy who says there's no such thing as muksa, meaning that when it's suddenly setting, I didn't have in mind that this is going to be used, I still can use it because I don't hold that muksa is an issue. We'll say the same thing as far as something that's born within the middle of the day. Okay? Came into being. So they're kind of like, it's like a camp of muksa nola, no muksa nola. They go hand in hand. So therefore, consequently, the dispute can be summed up as follows. Beit Shammai hold in accordance with the opinion of Rabbi Shimon, who maintains that there is no prohibition of muksa. And Beit Hillel hold in accordance with the opinion of Rabbi Huda, who rules that there is a prohibition of muksa. Okay? And so at this point, Rav Nachman's thing is going to be, when you look at this Mishnah that says, this one says he can, and this one says he can't, again, the egg that's laid on Yom Tov, can you not? It all boils down to whether you hold of muktzah being an issue or nola being an issue or not. Beit Shammai says you can eat the thing, no muktzah, no nola, no problem. Beit Hillel says it's muktzah, it's nola, that's a problem, you can't eat it. Great. Now the Gemara then goes in, and I'm going to kind of jump over this because I wanted to show you another idea here of why Rav Nachman, there's other things about Rav Nachman, which is very interesting, worth going into, but just to keep the flow of trying to understand the Mishnah, I'm going to jump over this, because they kind of take apart Rav Nachman a little bit, not totally. So we'll see, but that's first. So Rav Nachman's, in a nutshell, is going to say the disagreement between Beit Shammai Beit Hillel boils down to, do you believe in muksa or not? Do you hold of that issue? Okay, next. Rabbah comes along and he says, now, you know what's going on here? We're talking about, you said what? It's talking about the chicken that's laying eggs. You know what's really going on here? We're talking about a chicken designated for food. And we're dealing with an egg that was laid on a festival that occurs after Shabbos. Okay? So you have Shabbos, And then you have the festival coming on a Sunday. Now, what's the problem there? Is that can you prepare for from Shabbos into Yom Tov? The answer is no. So he's going to say here, what's going down is something called, the issue would be something called Hachana. Now, what is that? Hachana means to be able to prepare. You have to be, something has to be prepared in order for it to be usable. So it's reading this here. And the relevant issue is not the halachot of muktzah. Rather, one may not eat the egg due to the prohibition against preparation from Shabbat to a festival. Okay, so now the issue is preparation. Now, what's interesting here is there's this idea of prep. It's called hachana. Hachana, the terminology is hachana de rabba. Rabba is the person who came up with this, who introduces this idea, hachana de rabba. Preparation. So now, he derives his position from actually something that's found in, let me do this. Okay, let me show you this here. It says in the Torah that when the Jews got the man, that they did preparation. So it states like this. Is it here? No, it's not here. It's not 12. One second. No, okay, I was thinking of something else. Yes, okay, I know why I came here. Okay, this is interesting also. This is connected to this idea of something else. Okay, sorry. It's over. It's a little bit further here. I think it's here. Okay. So within the discussion of the manna, right? So the Jews were in the desert. They didn't have any food. They complained. God brought them meat, and they brought, and then ultimately 40 years of man, of the manna coming down from the heavens that fed the Jewish people for 40 years. Very unique type of food, kind of spiritual nature, kind of representing the idea of where the spiritual and the physical meet. And either way, so the concept of hachana comes from this. It says, but on the sixth day, so what happened? The idea was that they would get their daily ration and only for the day. That's it. They couldn't use it for more than that day. If they tried to, it would rot. Except on Fridays. Friday, they would get a double portion because they did not get the man on Shabbos. Shabbos is the day of rest, can't go out and collect, so they got a double portion. And that's why we have the two challahs on Friday and Shabbos. When we break bread, we're supposed to have two loaves, which remind us of the fact that God gave us a supply of double on Friday for Shabbos. So that's reminding us of the fact that we got a double portion to prepare for Shabbos. So what happens on the sixth day? When they apportion what they have brought in, it shall prove to be double the amount that they gather each day. So the idea of when they apportion, v'heichinu es asher yaviu, apportion, I would translate this, v'heichinu, they prepared that which they brought in. They actually did a preparation. And so that this idea of needing to prepare for the from the non-holy day for the holy day became an idea from that verse. Heichinu es asher yavir. Later on in the same story, it actually also gives us another So it actually has this idea that later on there was this whole thing about did they listen, did they not? So it says that they came. So on the sixth day, they gathered double the amount of food, two omers for each. And when all the chieftains of the community came and told Moses, he said to them, "This is what the Lord meant. Tomorrow is a day of rest, a holy Sabbath of the Lord. Bake what you would bake, boil what you would boil, and all that is left put aside to be kept until morning." So the idea of, again, is there's this act of preparation that's necessary. So Rava comes along in our Gemara and says, you know what's going on here? Whether or not you're allowed to eat from this egg that was laid on Yom Tov, it's actually talking about a case of where it was laid on a festival that occurs after Shabbat on Sunday. And the relevant issue is not the halachot of muktzah. Rather, one may not eat the egg due to the prohibition against preparation from Shabbat to a festival. You're not allowed to prepare from Shabbat to the festival. And where's that model from? From these psukim here. Because when it actually, these verses, when it comes up and says it, v'hechinu es asher yaviu, they're going to prepare what they bring. It's on the sixth day. There's a model that's set out that you have to have a non-holy day that gives you the ability to prepare for the holy day. And so coming down here, when Rava comes in here and he says you can't use this, it's all a question of whether or not you're looking at this as a question of hachana, preparation. Rava is going to say, and in this regard, Rava holds that any egg laid now was already fully developed yesterday and merely emerged from the chicken today. Consequently, an egg laid on a festival that occurred on a Sunday may not be eaten, as it was prepared on Shabbat, despite the fact that it was prepared naturally by heaven rather than by man. Because Rava, the Gemara comments, and Rava, who prohibits the one to derive benefit even from something that was not prepared by a man, conforms to his standard line of reasoning. As Rava said, what is the meaning of that which is written with regard to the manna? And it shall come to pass on the sixth day, and they shall prepare that which they bring in. That was the one that we looked at first. They'll prepare that which they bring in. Echinu es asher yaviu. According to Rava, it can be inferred from this verse that on an ordinary weekday, the sixth day, one may prepare what is needed for Shabbat. And similarly, on an ordinary weekday, one may prepare what is needed for a festival. However, on a festival, one may not prepare for Shabbat, and likewise, on a Shabbat, one may not prepare for a festival. So, by automatically, when this we're talking about, Rava's going to say, this is a case of where, when the egg is laid, the prep was done on a time when you're not supposed to do preparation for that holy day. And so, therefore, that's why you end up saying here, according to Beis Hillel, he'll say that's why you can't eat this egg that was laid, because it's lacking, or you can't, it was in a situation where the preparation cannot be done, because you can't do preparation from a day that's holy for another holy day. It has to be a day that's not holy that prepares for the holy day. Okay?
Base of the question, which is, look, if it's laid on that on day A, can you eat it on day A? You say, no. Like it's almost like he's dealing with a different question.
Well, he lays out a whole different. It's like he creates a whole different backstory. Exactly. It's like. Here you have, what's amazing here, what's amazing about this is, what you end up having here, is Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, the person, the editor of the Mishnah, okay? If you think about this, what do we have here? It's really like, this is where it gets really wild, because look at what we're saying here. We're going back to this line right here. We're starting out, and all we're saying is, we have this Mishnah that says, with regard to an egg that was laid on a festival, Beis Shammai says, it may be eaten. Beis Hillel says, it can't be. Okay? And now...
Beis Shammai says, it may be eaten even on that day.
Yes. So we have to see... So he's going to... So then that's... We're going to see that he'll end up...
The last rabbi we read isn't even dealing with that question. Like he's saying, the prohibition, you can't eat it on the next day. okay, well, that might be Beit Shammai might be.
No, no. So, in that, according to the way Rob is laying it out for us, the case is where it was Yom Tov came out on Sunday, and it was preceded. It's preceded by. One second.
Seems like a different case. Like, look, that's not the case we're discussing. We're discussing the legs that are laid on day A. And they eat it on day A. And he comes along and says, no, it's not really about that. It's about if it's laid on day A, can you prepare it and eat it on day B? And
no, so he's saying that this day B is the day A in our case. You know, you hear? Meaning... Rob is coming and telling us that, you know what this story is? This case that, again, he's creating a backstory that I would never have dreamt up in a million years. Okay, so here Rav Nachman gave us, like, straightforward, at least from our perspective, it's a holiday. The chicken laid the egg. One guy says he can eat it, one says he can't. You know why? Straightforward, it's an issue of muktzah nolad. It's an issue of saying something that didn't exist before the holiday, unless it's set aside to be, you know, used, it can't be used. And so, but there's an opinion that says the other way. So that's all that they're arguing about. Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel's argument is whether I hold of no letter and muktzah. Okay, that's Rav Nachman. Rabbah comes along and says, it's a whole different story. And also, by the way, as a side, He qualified it by saying, Rav Nachman, that we're talking about a chicken that lays eggs. Okay, it's a chicken for laying eggs, and that's why it gets us into the trouble with muktzah. Comes along Rabbah, and he says, nope, we're talking about a chicken that's used for food. Okay, but the issue is that it's actually a case of where Yom Tov came out on a Sunday, and therefore... when this is laid, it lacked preparation because of the fact that in order for something to be quote unquote prepared properly, it needs to be prepared the day before on a non-holy day. That's how he qualifies this case for us. Okay? So he's saying that it's specifically a case of where we're talking about the scenario of Yom Tov on a Sunday, which preceded obviously by Shabbat, that doesn't allow you to have prep, because prep by definition needs to be done on a secular day or a non-holy day that precedes the holy day in order for it to be okay. Okay, and then to fast forward here into Beit Shammai would probably, I would just, you know, the natural, he would say, hold on here. Okay, we're talking about it's Lechilam, Shemit Achana. Okay. Yeah, I would say that's and then the easy answer is that Beit Shammai does not comply with this idea of the need for having Hachana the way it's laid out here. Specifically, so in a certain sense, Rabbah's whole focus is to explain to us the position of Beit Hillel. Right? That seems to be the complete focus here. And then Abai comes along and he has a whole different, you know, that's something next time we can get into exactly what his argument is here, okay? But you see these two first positions. One is saying it's a story of muktzah, Rav Nachman, and Rab is saying it's an issue of hachana, about prep, and having a need to prep based on the way the way the verses are laid out. Because if you look at the verse, he's saying specifically, it was on the sixth day when they apportioned, when they prepared, what they brought in. Why do you have to make a big deal about this? It's the sixth day. It's actually, it's not, but on sixth day, but on the sixth day. It has in Hebrew, ha shishi, which is like an emphasis. It's not the sixth, it's not sixth day, but the sixth day, like with like an emphasis on, well, why are you giving me an emphasis? Why are you pushing me to focus on the sixth day? And so the answer is because it wants to teach us this idea that you need to prepare for the holy day with a mundane day prior. Okay, that's how he learns the verse. What's interesting is, as a total side, Maimonides, when he develops the halacha, he actually learns, he takes Rav Nachman and Rava, so this idea of moksa and the idea of hachana, preparation, and he kind of brings them together. One of the things that the Rambam learns, Maimonides understands from the way this is developed, that the way, when the Torah says, v'heichinos asher yaviu, that they prepared what they brought, that might not necessarily mean that there's a directive, like that there's a clear-cut commandment that that's how it has to be. It could be that this concept is more rabbinic in nature, derived from the pasuk, from the way the verse is stated, but it's not a directive from the Torah. It's more of a, they looked at the Torah and the way it was laying it out and said, oh, that's a concept that we need to apply to the idea of preparation for the holy day. So the Rambam seems to learn it as an asmachta. It's called an asmachta, which means like you can see certain things in the Torah and say, the Torah didn't really say outright, this is what you have to do, as much as it teaches a concept that now we're going to rabbinically apply because we're trying to create something in terms of the overall structure of the day, but maybe it's not that, you know, clear-cut as a biblical directive, which is kind of interesting. That's like already, now we're getting into like a deeper, analysis of what, how the Rambam, Maimonides, will look at the Talmudic passage and then say, you know, you might think that this is biblical in nature because they're quoting a biblical verse, but not so quick. There are times when you'll have verses that seems to be saying something that looks like a directive, but really it's not a clear-cut directive. The rabbis are saying, the way the Torah is saying it teaches me a concept of that I want to now apply to the law, but that's not biblical in nature, it's different. It's actually going to be a rabbinic type of law, developed rabbinically and applied rabbinically, which will have a different status in terms of, let's say, you violated, etc., things like that, but is conveying something very important. One of the, just as a quick aside, like we'll end it here, is that the way the Rambam kind of lays it out, according to more contemporary explanation, I'm trying to remember the name of the rabbi who lays it out. It's escaping me for right now. But he explains that if you look at it, you take a step back and you start to look at like what they're getting at. The Torah basically gives a directive. On Yom Tov, you're allowed to do work, in a sense, for the purpose of eating food. So as normally on Shabbos, you have to really limit to what you can do for food preparation and cooking. You're not allowed to cook on Shabbos. You can warm things, etc., but you can't cook. On Yom Tov, you're allowed to cook. But then we start to see that the rabbis kind of start limiting that. They create certain limitations on something that the Torah said you can do. The question is why? And so the way it's explained is that if you look closely at the way the rabbis go about the development of this and start creating limitations, because what they really were trying to do is to say, it's true that you can do cooking on Yom Tov, because for the sake of enjoyment on Yom Tov, and the way the Torah lays it out, it says it's clearly you can do that. But then they create these limitations because what they want to make sure is that you don't become a person who's just going to spend your whole day cooking. You don't want someone stuck in the kitchen like cooking the whole day because you're allowed to. You want the person to spend the time enjoying the meal with the family, etc. And so therefore, the rabbis, you start to see, they start putting in these like you can do that, but you can't, because what they're trying to create is a is an incentive to do most of the prep work prior to the holiday. So that when comes the holiday, you're not spending all your time doing the cooking. That 100% letter of the law says you're allowed to do it. But if you allow that, they get lost in that. And then you lose the whole concept of being rejoicing in the day itself. So you see the beautiful idea of the development now. So the Talmud gives us a very, takes us the Mishnah, which is very, very, you know, you see it's like very, there's like very little there. It's very cryptic. And then it starts to open it up and says, okay, this is the, one says this is the scenario. The other one says this scenario. We're going to have two other scenarios as to why Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel will have their opinions. And then you start to see the concept of the full picture as to what's going on. And then you take a step back and then you come back in and out. You pan in, you pan out. And then you put it all together. You walk away and you say, oh, okay, they developed a very deep, you know, multifaceted approach as to what's really going on here. So all you have is an egg is laid on Yom Tov, right? But then it opens up all these different vistas of different things that are really being tried to, you know, they're conveying to us as to what we should be doing when it comes to Yom Tov. Muktzah, Hachana, you know, different things that are going to push us towards how we ultimately observe the day.
Is that sort of like, you know, sometimes this happens with judges. Based in court in front of them, they know what the outcome is that they want. And now, okay, we have to come up with the rationale to get to that outcome. But, you know, listen, what we want to be is at a place where people are allowed to cook. They don't spend the whole day cooking.
Right. So you know,
and
it's...
now we're going to reverse engineer into that. And, you know, or are they saying, no, this is clear. Look at the way the rules are written, the rules and regulations. This outcome is based on the rules and regulations. Or is it a matter of, you know, no, this is the outcome we want. And... okay.
It could. So I would say like this. I think that the rabbis, the way that the Torah is developed, is that the outcome is not, we're not reverse engineering. We were given these set of things and we worked through it, and then what comes out, it was what I just described, but it was never reverse engineered. We actually are given tools to develop through to get to this, and then when we stop at the end, we go, wow, I got to this. This must be the message that's being conveyed. But when you start out, I'm not playing a game of reverse engineering. I'm actually working through this, working through the different, you know, approaches and getting to that end point and then realizing, you know what, look at what they just did here. They worked it towards this, and the Rambam's codifying it because that seems to be the outcome. But he only will say that because of the way they developed it. So it's based on the rules and regulations. The rules and regulations, so that's where you see like the divine inspiration with a divine, you know, God's like signature here. Like he sees the big picture. We're limited, right? So he, you know, when we work through his Torah and we develop these things, and then at the end of all of our development work, using the rules and regulations that we're given, the tools, and you come in like, oh wow, look at this. Look at what this picture is after we've worked through all the different things. So what we just did is I took the Gemara, I fast forward a little bit because I've seen it more than it's not the first time I'm looking at it, but after going through it and hearing what the Rambam says, the name is Rabbi Rabinovich. I think it's Rabinovich of blessed memory. That's who developed the Rambam's idea. Like he saw that in the Rambam, like he understood that the Rambam's developing it. But the Rambam's going to look at it. He's clearly, Rambam, Maimonides, when he looks at it, he's taking the Talmudic pieces, how they are developed, and creating the conclusions, and then looking back, you could say, you know, oh, look at what we came up with here. So as opposed to like, no, I had this was my incentive. Although there might be, it would be interesting to say, can you argue that there are cases of reverse engineering? I don't know. That's a good question. The way I would be more comfortable saying it is that they definitely were given tools of biblical exegesis, right? Taking the psukim in the Torah, the verse in the Torah, and seeing how they're written out. Like, for example, this is unbelievable. Tosfos brings down from Yerushalmi, the Jerusalem Talmud, of, well, how far back in the process of food preparation can I go? Meaning, can I go out to the field and start cutting the wheat on the day of the Yom Tov? Or I can only start from, you know, a later part in the process. Like, I need to just come from the flour hitting the water, you know? So that's where, that's when I looked at this one. So chapter, when you go to chapter 12 in Exodus here, it's brilliant. I mean, the Yerushalmi, the Jerusalem Talmud looks at this and it says, this is a very strange, it's strange how the psukim are left, are. Look at how it says here. It says, you shall celebrate a sacred occasion on the first day, sacred occasion on the seventh day. No work at all shall be done on them. Only what every person is to eat, that alone may be prepared for you. Right? So you're allowed to do the food prep, as it says here. What's the next line? You shall observe the Feast of Unleavened Bread. It really, I'll translate it more. Actually, closer to like the way it's ushmartem et hamatzah means you should watch your matzahs. What does that have to do? What's the juxtaposition of you can prepare food on the Yom Tov to you got to watch your matzahs? It's like the and it's only that it says and you should watch your matzahs. There's a vav achibur, it means like there's a vav, there's an and that connects this concept to the prior concept of a person can eat and prepare his food on Yom Tov. So, you know, so the Yerushalmi, the Jerusalem Talmud says, you know what, from that I see the juxtaposition. It must be talking about that just like by matzah, you watch your matzah from when the water hits the flour, because that's when it can become leavened. So that's where it is. When you're preparing your bread, you can only start from lisha, from kneading the bread, the flour. But you can't go back. You can't go out to your field and start cutting the wheat. That's way too, you know, do that before the holiday starts. You know, but where does he get it from? He gets it from the juxtaposition of the biblical exegesis. So it's like, that's one thing. And then they have another, Tosfos brings down another Yerushalmi that talks about also, again, derived from this ach here. It says, on the first day, call it holy. The seventh day, call it holy. All work you should not do, but the but. He says that's completely superfluous. It doesn't need to say but. Therefore, the but is actually going to tell you that you can't do as much as you think you can. It's a limitation. The but creates limitation. Ach, asher yachel, that which you will eat. The but, that which you will eat. It didn't have to say but. It just could have said, and that which you'll eat, that you can do. The fact that it had to give us this little ach creates limitation, and therefore you should know, in the verse itself, it's telling you, yes, you can prepare food for yourself, but it doesn't mean that you can start slaughtering the animal, or start picking the fruits off the trees, things, etc., etc. You got to do it from closer to within the cycle of preparation. Okay, great. But that's where did it come from? The Yerushalmi looked at it and said, "It's in the book. It's in the verse. It's in the Torah itself. It's not like they're making this stuff up. When you take the verses and you parse them clearly, like you see that it's telling you something that is conveying. The Torah is telling you there should be a little limitation in that it says, but or and you should watch the matzahs. Like you know, so that's the Yerushalmi's." Focus, but he's looking at the text. He's saying the text is conveying this in the subtlety, which is I think beautiful, right? It's right there, and so when you see certain things and you become more sensitized to like the flow of how the verses are laid out, you start to see things. You're like, what the heck is it saying here? And once you stop, you say, there's something being conveyed here because it's saying in such a bizarre way. That's in a very slick and subtle way, it's telling you an idea that's you know deeper than what you would have thought. But then when you start to, it's in there. It's actually the Torah is laying it out for us. It's just you have to be sensitized to what it's how it's saying it to us. Okay.